podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Big girls, they don't cry, they don't cry. Big girls, they don't cry, don't ask me why.
Frank, how many marathons have you run?
I think 13.
13, that's it? I've run like 25.
I know.
Hey, so now, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever cried at the end of a marathon?
Oh.
You have?
Yeah, two or three times.
Which ones?
Mostly Boston and one Vermont.
Because you missed your time or because
no,
you made your time?
Because I made my time and I couldn't believe, excuse me, I couldn't believe I was there and it was done. Oh, I've cried on Boylston Street several times.
All right, thank you.
Hey, folks. This is Chris, your hostess with the mostest, and welcome to episode 53 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. Hope you're doing fine. Stick with me, and we'll ride out this recession together. We'll run out this recession together. Follow me as we run out of the arroyo of despair, up the steep hill of challenge, and onto the plateau of athletic success, or probably more appropriately in my case, the plateau of athletic excess. I am out in Long Beach recording from my hotel room. Going to get ready to go back, jump on the red eye pretty soon, get back. I'm also using my auxiliary recording mic, which is a headset mic sort of get-up. Has a little bit of a hum in it, so apologize if the quality's bad. So if you're a returning friend, welcome. If you're a first-timer, guess what? This is a podcast. This particular podcast is put on by me and my border collie, Buddy the Wonder Dog. And as you will soon learn, Buddy does most of the editing. And we mostly cater to the mid-pack runner. We try to seek out interesting folks to talk to so y'all can get access to the cool stuff they have to say and mull it over and spit it up, you know, on your running friends next time you're out for a communal jog, so to speak. So, hey, keep friending me on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you guys. I've got picked up a bunch of new friends this week. I'm the Chris Russell in the Boston area, and my pictures show me on top of Camelback Mountain in Phoenix. And tell your friends about the podcast, more the merrier. If we can just, you know, get one person off the couch and out into the endorphin-soaked cold of a morning run, we will all have been successful. So today, as previously threatened, we talked to ultra-marathon man Dean Garnassus. And it came out okay. You know, I think I've done better interviews. He kind of threw me off. I mean, he is Dean Garnassus. You know, I've run a few miles in my life, but Dean's done it all. I mean, if you could figure out how to run to the moon, Dean would figure out how to run to the moon. So thanks, Dean. You're a stud. And interestingly, his next venture he's going to talk about is his next big thing is going to be Dean TV. He's going to do something on TV. That'll be interesting. We'll have to see how that goes. I always thought the drama of endurance sports would make a great TV show. But from the outside, you know, all you see from the outside is some dirty, sweaty old guy suffering, right, for hours on end. You know, you'd have to find some way to get inside the endurance athlete's brain where all the fireworks are. So we'll see how he does with that. This is actually a nice transition I have to share with you, and I'm going to try to do so without sounding like an elitist, because, well, maybe I am an elitist, but I do think it's good for everybody that running, and especially endurance events like the marathon, are becoming more accessible. As an observer of the sport for a few years, a few decades,
it seems as though the marathoners and the marathons are becoming accessible by making them actually more entertainment venues than races, right? And I don't know. I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, if that's what it takes to get people into races, then that's what it takes. You know, we're still gaining momentum. So I was thinking about it because, you know, I was listening to a bunch of these folks who ran the Disney Marathon, and I was struck by just how much of an entertainment event this is. And I don't want to knock anybody's religion here, but I'm not one of those Disney people. Took the kids there when they were young. And, you know, I didn't hate it, but for me, it seemed like a bunch of standing around in the hot sun with fat people from Wisconsin. Not that I have anything against Wisconsin. Love the cheese and the sausages. Always have fun in Milwaukee. Don't send me hate mail. Just using it as an element of hyperbole. Stay with me. And so it struck me this week that the folks at Disney have actually created a marathon that's essentially another ride in the park. And I thought about it, well, if I draw a straight line and progress that out into the future, I can see them selling tickets to complete non-runners, like fat people from Wisconsin, in the future, and they'll have like a tram ride that goes along with the runners, so you'd be in the pack with the runners, you know, so everybody can enjoy the emotion of the marathon, right? And you see them riding next to you, and they'll be going, hey, look, Marge, he's throwing up, get a picture. Hey, maybe that isn't a bad thing either. Maybe it's all, you know, all this exposure is good. I don't know. What do you guys think? Anywho. My training goes well as can be expected. I ran the Derry 16 miler like a champ this last weekend, went out easy, had great weather, held back on the hills, hammered home the last 5K for a respectably mediocre 206 finish. The weather turned out to be awesome. It was sunny, in the teens, dry road conditions. I was definitely beat up the earlier part of this week, though. You know, my quads were sore, and I pulled a little thingy in my hammy on Tuesday out in the woods with the dog. I'm still carrying too much weight. You know, it's Derry. There were no bands, no singers, no people in costumes to take your picture with, and nobody cried. But there was hills, cold weather, and a lot of grizzled old runners. By the way, the theme for today, if you hadn't noticed, is crying in the marathon. I heard Gordon from the Run to Disney in his podcast crying. It made me wonder, it struck me, you know, how common is that? Because, frankly, I've never, not that it's a bad thing, I don't mind if you cry at a marathon, but I've never felt like crying at a marathon. I felt like swearing a lot. I've yelped for joy a few times, but I don't think I've ever cried. Not that I remember, anyhow. I may have. So I asked around, and I found that actually it runs about 40-50% of the people I asked, serious, you know, experienced marathoners, that they have cried for joy at the end of a successful marathon. So there you go. My next race is the Martha's Vineyard 20-miler. Join me. Love to have the company. Come on. How hard can it be? It's on an island, for goodness sake. All right, enough rambling. On with the show.
Have you ever cried in a marathon?
Never.
Never? Why not?
I don't know.
How many marathons have you run?
Maybe about 15.
15? Yeah. You've never cried?
No. Maybe after the hospital, but not right when I finished.
And now for the equipment check.
All right, let's do that equipment check. Folks, I tried to get this company on the phone, but they ignored me. Their loss. And you see how I am? I'm going to give them free publicity anyway. So when you run these cold races, like Derry last week, and you see folks wearing all sorts of crazy stuff to stay warm, different people handle the cold in different ways. There's always some guy in shorts, and there are always people bundled up like they're going snowmobiling. You know, that runs the gamut. Some people wear those Darth Vader masks that are some hard material that sticks out away from the nose that allows them to breathe and doesn't freeze up on them.
Luke, I am your father.
But I saw something new this week. This lady was wearing these little strap-on covers that went over the front top of the toe of her shoe, and they cut the wind and kept her toes warm. She told me that the website, and I checked it out, is runwarm.com. So go figure. Good name for it, huh? So if you suffer from cold toes, you can check that out. Another issue I found, you know, in these cold races is that if you have to carry gels, they may freeze on you and become like gel-sicles. So to avoid this, I found a couple of things you can do. One is you can cram up to like 3 gel packs into that little key pocket in your tights, and that'll keep them warm. You want to spread a little lube around that area on the inside because they'll chafe you if you got them in your key pocket. The other thing I do is I stick one up the back side of my gloves, the part away from the palm on the back. They're up against the back of your hand. They'll stay warm, and you can still use your hands. You can stick them in the front part of your gloves, but I found that I tend to squeeze them absentmindedly, and they end up rupturing, and then I get a fistful of gel in the middle of a race. Fistful of gel. That could be a new Clint Eastwood movie. A fistful of gel. So keep warm, my friends. Spring is on the way.
And now for our featured interview.
All right, we're back.
Here we are.
After yeah? All
right. Legal disclaimer, yeah.
Yeah, legal disclaimer. You're being recorded. This call may be recorded for quality purposes, and it's very important to us. So, so anyhow, I read your book. I figured I'd reach out to you.
I hear that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've read a lot of books about running, you know? And, I talked to Bart Yasso, and I talked to Dave McGilvery. You know Dave McGilvery?
I know both those guys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm great idols of those guys.
Exactly, yeah. So I talked to both those guys, and their books were pretty good, but they're kind of episodic, you know, like here I did this, here I did this, here I did that. I liked what you did because you actually kind of hooked it all together into a story with a theme, and it seems like you're...
I like to say, Chris, is that every runner has a story, and mine is just one of them, but you've talked to hundreds of runners, so have I. I think runners... by nature are pretty interesting people, and they have an interesting story of, you know, their life as a runner, you know, what hooked them, when they got hooked, and why they got hooked. So I just thought, I'll just tell my story, and some people relate to it, other people have different stories, but I'll do the best I can.
Yeah, I haven't got to the 50-50 book, but I'll get to it eventually. I got a couple in the queue. So, but I was reading on a business trip a couple, probably a month or so back, your Ultramarathon Man book. And I really liked the part where you were describing what it feels like when you get above, 40 miles in an ultra, because that's really hard to do, you know?
Well, it's hard to put someone there, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like you almost have to be there to really know what it is you're talking about, right? And I thought you did a really, really good job of that with the highs and the lows of the high miles of an ultra.
Well, you know what has been surprising to me, actually, is how many non-runners or even, recreational 10K runners read that first book, Ultramarathon Man, about the description of what you're describing, and said, God, I got to do this. And I'm thinking, man, if I read that book, I'd say, I never want to put myself through. And so many people have said, I lust for that kind of adventure. I'm going to try this, which has surprised me, frankly.
Yeah, that is kind of surprising, isn't it? When you think about the stories you tell about the highs and the lows of it all, but I guess it changes you. You know, once you've seen the other side of the wall, there's really, not much else to be afraid of, right? So,
well, I've learned a lot of valuable lessons from a lot of great people, and one of them was the previous race director of the Western States 100, Norm Klein, who was a great ultra runner in his own right, and he said at the start of this race, the first time I ran it, that not all of you will finish, and he applauded our efforts for having the courage to be standing there at the starting line. And he said, those of you that do finish this race, you will cross that finish line 100 miles, down the way as essentially a different person than you are standing here at the start of this race. It will forever change you, and you will learn more about yourself in the next 100 miles than you knew your entire lifetime. And it was true. It was really true. I mean, there's, a saying, adversity exposes a man to himself. So you learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was always thinking that just the pure emotional content of endurance sports and running, would make great entertainment. The issue is it's all in the inside of your head most of the time, right?
Well, some people get it and other people don't. And I think that, you'll never convince someone who doesn't really get it why a runner does what they do. I mean, some people think, it's so boring. I mean, what do you think about? And, other people get it. They kind of know what you just described. And I think to those people, it's an internal journey more than a physical journey.
Yeah, it's like a window on a different world, sort of like the old Aldous Huxley Doors of Perception. Another San Francisco connection there. Jim Morrison was in Los Angeles, I think.
Yeah, he was.
Probably too young for that. Actually, you're about my age, so you probably remember that.
I got some of the classics on my playlist, Riders on the Storm and some of the others. Yeah, I know. you know, he was a little before my time, but I still like his music and his message.
Do you listen to an iPod when you're out running?
I do. I listen to an iPod, and I've got a pretty, you know, robust selection of music. The one thing that I've started to do in the last year is listen to a lot of audiobooks. I used to love to read when I was younger, and, you know, one of the things that I missed as an endurance athlete is, you know, you're training so much that you don't have as much time to read. And
yeah,
now
exactly.
With the advent of audiobooks, it's great. I mean, I've listened to so many classics, and it actually helps the miles spin by too.
Yeah, I found the same thing. And I used to actually I used to run with, like, when they used to be tape cassettes, and I'd have, you know, all the big handful of tape cassettes with me when I was training for marathons.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
flipping them over.
Yeah.
So I've always liked the audio on the run, just like you said, to take your mind off it, you know, to get through it. There's sometimes you just want to go out without any entertainment and just enjoy the run, you know, some runs. But
I always carry a digital recorder with me, and I do some of, you know, my best writing. Not that any of it's very good, but I do some of my best thinking when I'm out running. And so I wrote a lot of that first book, Confessions of an All-Night Runner, during all-night runs. I'd literally go run all night and just confess into this digital recorder how I was feeling. And then when I was on business trips, you know, I'd fly around the country, I would just type up the notes, and that's how I wrote most of the book. So when I do a lot of long running, I always carry a digital recorder and record, you know, some thoughts. And, you know, any runner, I'm sure you as well, have had some of your best thoughts and some of your clearest thinking when you're out on a long run.
Yeah, absolutely. You have those moments of clarity, and you're like, oh, I got to remember this, and then when you get back, you don't, right?
Exactly.
It's like waking up in the morning and going, now what was that dream I had? You know?
With the advent of a digital recorder, it's so light that it's really easy to carry one along.
Well, yeah, that's what a lot of the guys who are doing what I'm doing, the podcasting, do, is they just go out and they turn on the recorder, and they run with the recorder on, and then they publish that as like a show, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you get the good and the bad and the ugly with that, you know?
You get a lot of labored breathing in between, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I try not to do that because, you know, it sounds a little bit like a porno movie to me, you know, all that breathing and coughing and stuff. Yeah. So what did you do last year? What was your year like last year? What were your big things you got done?
Well, you know, last year I set out to run across the great deserts of the world. So,
okay.
Yeah. There's a series of races called the Four Desert, which are held in, you know, the most inhospitable environments on the planet. And
sure.
I said, you know, I'm going to try and do all four of these in 1 year, which had never been done before. And I figured none of them were in North America, and I wanted to do one here, so I threw in a run across Death Valley. So last year I ran across the Atacama Desert, and then the Gobi Desert in Central Asia, then Death Valley, then the Sahara, and in December, Antarctica, which is the largest desert on Earth. People don't realize that Antarctica is a desert, but it's just a very cold desert, but it's a desert.
Yeah, I saw that you were running Antarctica. I saw that on your, on your site or something, and I thought you were just going back to do that. You had done one run to the South Pole thing. So.
Yeah, this was different. This was on the, you know, the exterior, and it was, you know, conditions were much different than the South Pole, which is, you know, right smack in the middle of the continent. So it was a different experience altogether, and it was pretty enjoyable. The only thing is the boat ride home, we got stuck in a, you know, basically hurricane strength winds and a force 11 gale. I've never been so green in my life for 2 days.
That's tough because you can't control it, right? You just gotta ride it out.
Yeah, well, and you know, it was kind of hairy actually, because this boat was just getting slammed, and you know, it was chaos. And actually the boat behind us never made it. They sunk actually, and had to be rescued. It was
no
really
kidding.
Tragic. Yeah. So it's the real deal down there. You forget how exposed you really are when you get down there.
No kidding. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I don't like that kind of stuff. So you're running in these deserts, I guess. Are you a hot weather guy? I mean, how do you run in
people
terms
say,
of temperature?
Do you like running in heat? I'm like, no. They say, do you like running in cold? No.
No.
But, you know, I've learned to adapt to the heat and to the cold. I mean, they're different strategies, and, you know, it just really comes down to experience more than anything else. It's just putting yourself out in these environments and learning, you know, what works. And, you know, I've run the Badwater Ultra Marathon now 8 times. So, you know, you learn over the years kind of how to put things together and what to avoid, what, you know, what to take in as far as fluids and electrolytes. And then, you know, as far as the cold goes, so much of dealing with the cold just comes down to, you know, having your layering systems dialed in. And
right.
You know, one of my sponsors, my main sponsor, is a company called The North Face. So I've got a really good sponsor for running in the cold.
Yeah, you got to stay warm without getting wet.
Yeah,
or without staying wet.
And, you know, the thing with the desert is that the humidity is so low that, you know, moisture, if you're sweating, moisture is evaporated so quickly that dehydration can sneak up on you quicker than you realize.
Right, you just don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that you go out to these races and you see these poor guys coming in covered, just caked in salt, and you're thinking, oh, it just, you know, they didn't even know what hit them. And,
yeah,
so the only reason I know this is because I've been there and lived through it, luckily. Yeah.
Yeah, especially, you know, a big guy like you, you got to take in a lot of sodium and a lot of potassium probably, too.
I'm 6'4", 230, and, you know, that's a lot of weight to carry around.
Yeah.
That's a joke, Chris.
Yeah, you're not 6'4".
No.
How tall are you?
I think, you know, 5'8", but pushing 5'9".
Yeah. Yeah, but you're a big guy. You're still a pretty big guy, right? You're like 180, 190, right?
No, I'm, you know, I'm about 153 right now.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I get that from. Huh. Well, I apologize.
No, it's funny. I have so many people come up to me at book signings and say, God, I thought you were a lot bigger than that. And I think it's the cover art they use on some of these magazines and things. When they blow it up, you look bigger. But, you know, I've consistently been surprised by some of these people I've met that, you know, look so big, and then you meet them in person at a, you know, at a trade show or something, and they're really quite compact.
You know, I think you're right, because I think a lot of times they're emphasizing the size of your legs in the pictures. And it just makes you look bigger, you know.
Well, I will say that I, you know, I do carry, you know, a bit more bulk than, you know, your quote-unquote average runner. And I think that has to do with the fact that I do a lot of other sports. You know, I love outdoor sports.
Right.
You know, windsurfing and surfing and mountain biking, you know, rock climbing, snowboarding. And, you know, when you do these other sports, you end up with bulk. That, you know, might not be the best thing for a runner, but I'm not going to give up what I love.
No, you're right, and it's tough for some people when they start doing running, like triathletes start doing running, and they start to lose that bulk. It kind of freaks them out because
if you look at, you know, an elite marathoner, for instance, you know, there's just not a lot going on upstairs, if you will. I mean, the upper body is typically pretty atrophied to the point where. You know, some runners, you look at them and you always think, is that person, you know, really, would you consider that person really, you know, in great shape? I mean, yeah, they can certainly run fast, but, man, I would question if they could do one or two pull-ups. And
that's,
you know,
more than that. You look at these guys, because I see these guys coming into Boston every year for the marathon, right? And you go, you know, is that guy even healthy looking? And, you know, they're not even really healthy looking.
Yeah, no, it's... And that's part of the stigma, I think, with running and even ultra-marathoning is that... A lot of people, you know, when you get outside of, you know, our world, you know, quote unquote, our circle, a lot of people think we're just freaks. I mean, they look at some of these folks and they go, God, that, you know, that person looks so unhealthy, they're killing themselves.
Yeah.
Why would I ever aspire to be like that? And, you know, certainly to the average American male, they look at, you know, these you know, Kenyans that are winning marathons, and they certainly admire their talent. I mean, to run at that pace for 26.2 miles is insane, but it's not something they necessarily aspire to be, because it's not a healthy, you know, overall level of fitness that they want, you know, to tune their bodies into.
Yeah, I've had that before. People saying, you don't look like a marathoner. You know, you look healthier than a marathoner, right? So what are you working on this year? You find something that's never been done before?
I've got a bunch of things brewing. You know, this year I'm actually looking at hosting a TV series on endurance sports.
Oh, okay. You're
so
stepping up to TV.
Well, you know, my goal now, I mean, as I as my, you know, quote-unquote brand matures, if you will, is to kind of leverage, you know, any notoriety that I've achieved and promote what we do. Promote
yep.
healthy, active living, running, triathlons to a broader audience. And
yep.
TV is a great vehicle to do that. I mean, my goal is to, you know, increase the size of the pie, the number of people that are doing what we love, in hopes that, you know, more of us can make a living, you know, doing what we love. Let's grow this industry and more people that, you know, love the triathlon or, you know, love to run can actually get into the industry and make a living doing what they're passionate about. Because I've been able to eke it out, and it's been so rewarding for me, and I really want to try and help others achieve that same thing.
Yeah, it's tough. When people think of these ultra athletes, they think of the crusty old guys living alone in a cabin somewhere, you know, running in the woods. And I think you got some crap from some of those crusty old guys for sort of being commercial, right, and trying to make some money off it.
Well, I think there was a bit of a backlash. I don't know how you can avoid that, actually, and I think, you know, a lot of it was misguided because
yeah.
a lot of people really, I mean, it's funny to see what some people write when they don't know me because they really think that I'm something that I'm not. But you're right. A lot of people said, you know, he's so commercial or, you know, he's a sellout and, you know, he's just laughing himself all the way to the bank. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking, whose bank account are they talking about? It ain't mine.
Well, the thing that gets me about that is where did we come up with the assumption as a sport, you know, we have to be some sort of starving to death people to do this, right? Where does it say we can't, you know, people shouldn't make money off it, right? So it's an interesting paradigm in our sport.
Yeah, and I think the younger generation certainly realizes and recognizes that there can be purity in making a living doing what you love. I mean, I think, you know, I totally respect everyone's point of view and everyone's opinion. And I know people that were of a mindset to kind of separate, you know, church and state, if you will, that if you love to run, you know, hold that separate than your, you know, than your quote-unquote life. So have your normal day job where you're miserable and then have
yeah.
your running where you're passionate. And I think a lot of people have questioned that and said, well, you know, why can't you do what you're passionate about? And that's kind of what I did, and it's, for me, you know, it's proved to be the most fulfilling thing in my life.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that over the next couple of years with the economy in the States being crappy. You know, people who are on the edge are going to say, screw this, I'm giving up my miserable day job, and I'm going to go be a coach, or, you know, I'm going to go sell T-shirts or whatever, right?
I think so. I think there's a lot of people have questioned, you know, what is meaningful to them. And, you know, the
yeah.
other thing that people have done have, you know, they've said, you know, regardless of the amount of material wealth I have, if I don't have my health, I don't have anything. I mean, health is wealth. And
right.
you know, now people are kind of forced into that perspective because they don't, you know, they don't have that lucrative job they used to have. And they kind of say, well, what's, you know, what is most important to me? And no matter what
right.
happens to the economy, no matter, you know, how bad the layoffs are, how bad your mortgage slips, your 401k deteriorates. You know, if you've got your health, you still have that internal feeling of power. And it, to me, that's something that I would never give up for any amount of money or anything else.
We're almost sort of like the athletic drug dealers here, because people get turned on by the triathlete and the run the marathon, and they start saying, okay, why am I doing 80 hours a week in this thing I hate and only doing, you know, 10 hours a week in this thing I love, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Well, and, you know, to be honest, I mean, the industry is maturing as well, and there are more opportunities. I mean, the number of opportunities available were somewhat limited. But now, I mean, I give talks a lot to colleges, to graduate schools, especially business schools. And, you know, I have kids come up to me all the time and say, you know, so, you know, what's the hot new sector? I mean, you know, is technology going to turn around? Is nanotechnology, green technology, what's next? You know, where do I look for a job? And I always say, you know, look inside your heart, and what do you
yeah.
love? I mean, if it's footwear design you love, pursue that with your passion, and there's opportunity there. And, you know, the
yep.
more people that get
yep.
into the sport and make it something they enjoy, the more opportunity there'll be for everyone.
Yeah, because looking at the people I see who actually make money in, you know, marathons and triathlons and stuff, their market is the broader part of the market, not the elites, you know? The elites are the brand, but the money comes from the fat part of the bell curve now, you know?
I agree. I mean, I think we need to, you know, kind of, you know, make it less intimidating for people to get in, the entry point, because because frankly, a lot of people look at what we do and it and they're intimidated by it. So how do you get them to take that first baby step, you know, and just try even walking a 5K, which for a lot of people is exhaustive. You know, how do you get them to do that? And those are the masses, and I think that if we can get those people motivated and inspired and energized, I think collectively as a society, we would be a lot happier. I mean, certainly we'd save a lot of cost on health care expenditure, but I think collectively people are just fundamentally happier when they're healthier.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, we ran cross country in high school, so we knew how to run, but, you know, how many times have you had somebody come up to you and say, you know, I never thought I could do this? Now they're running sub-3-hour marathons and ultra-marathons, doing all this other stuff, right? I mean, I hear that every day. So.
I see it every day as well. And, you know, a lot of times it just takes one exposure. And I've seen that with kids, too. It just takes literally one time for them to go out with you and just go on a, you know, like even a 2K trail run and kind of enjoy it. And just that one exposure is a hook. And they say, oh, that's kind of cool. I'm going to get some new shoes. And, wow, you know, this stuff wicks, and that was cool, and this is fun. And so it's just getting them out just that one time to take that leap of faith that, you know, it's not going to kill them, and just try it. And a lot of times that's enough to get someone going.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think running in general and triathlons in general are going to keep growing in popularity as people get exposed to it, especially through word of mouth, you know, when they see their neighbors and their family members doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultras are going to get more popular, though, you know? After having done, you know, run 50 miles myself last September, I realize it's not as hard as it seems. You know what I mean?
I agree. I think you're right. The ultras will grow, and, you know, to anyone inside, you know, the ultra world, they've seen explosive growth. I mean, a lot of these races now fill up, you know, very quickly, where before they used to be able to show up at the start and kind of run it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that I think, the perspective that I try to maintain is that, you know, while the ultra scene might double in my lifetime, I mean, we're talking 12 to 15,000 people, it doubles to, you know, 30,000 people.
Right.
It's accessible to, you know, to some elite athletes and even those that are kind of just right on the border of being elite. But again, the masses, I mean, the millions of people that are, you know, 10, 15, 20% overweight, those are, we're talking, you know, huge numbers, millions, not, you know, 30,000 or something. So I always try to keep that perspective.
Right. Yeah, we got to remember that we're only 2% of the population, probably, people who are actually, you know, running consistently or doing something consistently.
I think that some of the numbers I've seen most recently, when they look at, including walkers and runners, the numbers are pretty substantial. I mean, they're talking 50 to 60 million in the U.S. would consider themselves a, you know, runner or a walker. Now, you know, marathon running, no. You know, maybe going for a run once or twice a week, that's more typical.
Yeah, but even in the marathon, you're seeing a couple million people finish a marathon each year now, whereas, you know, back, 15, 20 years ago, it was under, you know, 500,000. So,
yeah, I mean,
it's definitely becoming more accessible. All right. Well, that was fun. So we got anything you want to let people know or how they stay abreast of what you're doing?
Well, I've got, you know, you can always go to my website, which is just ultramarathonman.com. And I've got a new movie coming out.
Okay.
So early February, the DVD will be released of it's a movie, a documentary about a time I ran 50 marathons in 50 U.S. states in 50 days. So that documentary comes out in a couple weeks here. So
all right.
You know, if you're interested, you can go on my website and see a little trailer. And it's gotten pretty good reviews, so I'm happy with it.
So you just have the two books, or you got more than that?
Two books right now, a third and a fourth in the works, and a DVD, yeah.
All right. So you're the multimedia man, too.
I'm just a runner, Chris. That's at heart. I love to run. That's it.
Well, I got to jump on a jet plane out to Long Beach today. So if you want to run about 300 miles south, we can hook up.
Well, enjoy the weather. It's going to be almost 70 degrees here today on the West Coast. So.
Yeah, the reason I'm getting out of here is we're going to get a foot of snow tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I changed my schedule to fly today.
Get out while you can. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for the
call. Good talking with you.
We'll see
you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care, bro.
Have you ever cried at the end of a marathon, John?
I've never cried.
Have you ever felt like crying at the end of a marathon?
I've become overwhelmed with emotion. I would say I cried at the beginning of a marathon. My very first marathon was at the inaugural Washington, D.C. marathon. It was also the final Washington, D.C. marathon because they canceled it after that year.
Your first marathon, though, when you get to the end?
Ever. No, at the beginning. So you started in Alexandria and you ran across this bridge with the Lincoln Memorial, or not the Washington Memorial, right?
Yeah.
I just thought through this. I'd lost a lot of weight and I trained a lot, and it was like I'm finally here doing my first marathon, and I was crying for the first mile.
Oh, there you go. So you did cry.
It was the beginning, though. It wasn't the end.
It wasn't the end. Okay.
It was the end.
All right.
Here's today's quick tips.
Okay, quickie tippy. Okay, folks, you may wonder, when you look at my training plan, which, by the way, is available on Buck Outdoors, why I run so many long middle-distance races during my training and what I think they do for me. Well, if you only do long, slow runs, you're building good aerobic base, but you're also training your body to run long and slow. So what I do is I replace as many of these long, slow runs as I can with long races. So essentially they become long tempo runs. You know, I feel, and this is just my sort of take on it, that they're more realistic training for a marathon. You know, you still get the distance and the aerobic base, but you're also getting to test out your pacing skills. A real race forces you to deal with real race environment, real race conditions that you'll have when you do your target marathon. You know, it forces you to recover from a fast start, monitor your pace, and, you know, try to finish strong. And let's face it, running is very specific activity, and there's nothing more specific than a race. And what I try to do is run at my or around my target marathon pace. So many times, you know, this has left me dying a few miles short of the finish, but that's exactly the kind of thing you want to learn before you get into the marathon. You know, you don't want to go into your taper thinking you're in great shape when you're not. You know, hard, long races like Derry or Martha's Vineyard or Stu's, 30K, you know, 30K, 20-milers, 16-milers, and that, and even half marathons, you know, will give you enough of a kick in the head to keep you humble and on track in your training. And since I'm a mid-packer, I'm not really running fast enough to injure myself, and it's not all out. It's just a good, honest effort. So, you know, you may not have the plethora of middle-distance races. Yes, I said plethora. I'm sorry. That we have up here during the spring run-up, but you know, even a 10K or a half marathon hard will give you an excellent sense of your race shape. So race your way to your goal. It works for me, and it's entirely more social. All right, folks, you've reached mile 18 of this podcast, and we're starting to do the death shuffle to the finish. I got a couple of nutrition experts lined up for the next few podcasts. I may try to sneak in Kevin Green from Just Finished because he seems like a good guy and doing something good over there. They surprised me by being super responsive, these nutrition people, so I may end up doubling up with a Nutrition Palooza episode or just put out two. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to ask for your help now, like Ashlyn Dave does with his race. I have my race, and I want all you youngsters to come up and run my hometown race, the Groton Road Race. It's got a 2K, a 5K, a 10K, and a tots trot. It's a great family event, and it's one of the prettiest courses you've ever seen. And we've been putting on a quality event for 17 years. You know, we get close to 2,000 folks in all the races. So go to GrottonRoadRace.com and sign up. As we get closer, I'll try to set something special up for the Run, Run, Live family. It's April 26th. Come up, see the race that got me started running again. Back when I started running back in 1991, or was that 1891? Sometime back then. I went out in the woods with the dog and had a sharp pain in my hammy, but I managed to stretch through that. You know, it's a combination of the cold and mincing about in the snow on my yak tracks and running that hard Derry. You know, I should have taken the ice bath, but we'll see if it's something. By the way, don't want to leave your yak tracks on your shoes. You want to take them off after you run because they'll deform your shoes because they kind of like they're elastic-y and they'll eventually deform your shoes. I learned that this week. Thanks for hanging in there with me for a few mindless minutes of mid-pack mishmash. Give you a little inspiration as well. As I'm writing this, I'm in Long Beach, and I pulled something in the back of my leg, and it's making me hard to train. So, you know, I started to panic, but you know what? I'm not panicking. I am sanguine. Or is that sanguine? I don't know. Something like that. And I'll take a couple days off or whatever it takes. It's just a pulled muscle. I'll take care of it. It'll take care of itself in a couple days. Already feeling better. I actually ran like 10 miles today after I wrote this.
don't worry too much about injuries when you're in your marathon training plan. You have to take the look at the big picture. You have to learn to look at your training and your running in terms of years and decades, not like day-to-day, like a desk calendar, you know? That's why I don't carry a Garmin or a Nike Plus or really care about my paces and my distances in time today or tomorrow. And it really doesn't matter as long as at the end of the year I'm achieving my goals and I'm living the miles that I want to live. So, folks, you got to live the miles, live the training. Don't let it stalk you and ride you like a harpy. Time flows like a river, and we are just motes in the current. So I guess I would be saying, since I'm in California, go with the flow. So I got some music for you from the starving artists over at the PodSafe Music Network. Go give them 99 cents. So I got a good song for you today. This song is called Flashlight, and it's by a group called Michael the Girl. Wonder what that means. Hey guys, have a great week. I will see you out there. Listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.